Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Waiting. You do it at grocery stores, in traffic, and at the doctor's office. But what if you could skip the wait altogether? Introducing TrustCare Plus, a healthcare membership that makes feeling better even faster. Skip the waiting room and enjoy priority access at any TrustCare clinic. Sick kid? Text your care crew day or night. Get discounts on prescriptions and so much more. Wait no more. Feeling better just got a whole lot faster. Join TrustCare Plus today. Plans start from just $15 a month. Learn more at TrustCareHealth.com/plus.
All free record on my count. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. Roll A, fade up on A.
Southern Miss to the top. You're tuned in to the Eagle Hour.
Happy Friday, everyone. Welcome to the Super Talk Eagle Hour from rainy Oak Grove, Mississippi, in the Southern Bancorp studio. This is Bob Getty along with Kelly Sander. Andrew Abbott, full crew here to wrap up another week of Golden Eagle Sports Talk. Opening segment of the show sponsored by Dickey's Barbecue Pit. Proud supporters of the Eagle Hour and a great place to take your family tonight for dinner. Great place to cater your next event. Patrick McGee is going to join us later from the Times-Picayune. The New Orleans Saints are leaving New Orleans. And Patrick will have all the details about that later in the show.
Not permanently, though.
Wait till the show, Sander. Do you not know what a tease is?
I just thought people were going to be driving off the highway.
Slap him, would you please, Andrew?
You're going to have a picket mob here with calling us dirty liars for setting up a tease like that.
Going to go on and ruin my tease. The Saints are leaving New Orleans, and Patrick McGee will tell us why later in the show. But you're just terrible, Sander. Why do I put up with you?
Well, like I said,
why do I employ you?
A lot of Saints fans, it's a rainy day. They're already having trouble driving. You don't want
to call it a tease.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Dr. Sam Ehrlich is a professor at Boise State University. He's really keeping up with all the changes in college sports. Andrew, introduce our fine guest, please.
Yeah, Sam here is, I guess you'd say, one of the experts on Twitter of trying to explain the NCAA settlement, the impacts. He does great work on Twitter putting it out there. It's free, more importantly. And I think, Sam, you do a really good job of putting it in layman's terms. So I wanted to ask you, I guess, probably the three biggest things that come from the settlement, and there's going to be a lot to change because there's going to be more lawsuits of challenging the settlement, particularly Title IX filed theirs, or a Title IX lawsuit was filed, I think, yesterday. So, you know, nobody's out of the woods yet, but there's a foundation for it all. But I think the three things to talk about is, you know, now that there's an established revenue sharing, what it kind of means for collectives, and then the grandfathering of rosters. So, Sam, I mean, just kind of, I guess, to start off with, give us your take. Did it go about how you figured? What's kind of your biggest critique? What do you like the most?
Yeah, and thanks so much, guys, for having me. I'm happy to be back and talk about what has really been just a fundamental change in college sports moving forward, just with the advent of the revenue-sharing era and with all the other changes that the House settlement and everything surrounding the House settlement is going to bring. To answer your question, I really do think it went roughly how I expected. I think most people were expecting the settlement to be approved. You know, Judge Wilkin really didn't have a whole lot of issue with most of it. There was the issue with grandfathering, roster limit grandfathering, towards the end that did put it into jeopardy in a little bit, and that's certainly something we could talk more about. But really, for the brunt of the settlement, the most important parts of the settlement, the revenue sharing, the clearinghouse that's kind of designed as kind of this anti-circumvention clause for what is essentially a salary cap here in college sports now, and then the roster limits as well. All of that has been approved, and all of that is going to kick off on July 1st, 2025.
So I guess let's start with the grandfathering of rosters. So now that there is roster limits, everybody can get scholarships now, but because there's, I guess, the roster limits have shrunk because of more scholarships available, there are players who are going to be, I guess you'd say, cut, but because of, you know, you don't want to just, I guess, for lack of a better term, screw these athletes over so they can kind of stay on the roster in these designated player spots. I guess that's the best way to explain it. So I guess in the simplest terms possible, kind of explain it to our listeners and what it means. It was phrased to me as it's kind of going to be like COVID rosters in a sense of you're going to see this for a few years and then it'll be phased out after about 4 years.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way of putting it. It is very much a temporary thing. It's very much related to the immediate short-term effects of the roster limits and the settlement. And just to give a little more background on these roster limits, so you know, your listeners can kind of have a really clear picture of what we're talking about. In the past, the way it worked kind of pre-settlement was, for football, for example, you could have as many football players as you want on the roster, subject to, you know, some conferences had some limits, but you'd see it, a lot of the bigger schools, for example, they'd have 125, 130, 135 sometimes players on their football roster, but you could only give 85 of them scholarships. So you'd have a lot of walk-ons. You'd have a lot of maybe preferred walk-ons in some cases that maybe set up to get a scholarship down the road. But the point being, you could have a lot of players, as many players as you want, but not as many of them can get scholarships. Now, the roster limit for football, for example, is 105. You can give, just like you said, Andrew, you can give 105 scholarships, but you can only have 105 players. So you could still have walk-ons. You still don't have to give everyone a scholarship, but that does really cut down on the number of players because, you know, if you are one of these teams that has 130 players on your roster, you're now going to cut 25 of them to get onto that roster cap. And this was something that Judge Wolkin, the judge who was overseeing the approval of the settlement, really had an issue with, because there was a lot of really heartfelt letters, a lot of really, honestly, emotionally devastating letters by athletes who were saying, you know, I got cut from my team. I lost my scholarship in some cases, even though teams are not supposed to do that. If they're cutting them because of the roster limits, but all these players getting cut, all these players getting affected because of kind of what we talked about before. So what Judge Wilkin kind of required was some measure of grandfathering, some measure where schools could, at least as much as they could, mitigate the immediate impact from the settlement, from having to just cut wholesale all these, you know, these thousands of players who across Division I are now going to be subject to these roster cuts. And so what they created, what the parties came back and created was this designated student-athlete label, which applies to all athletes who are either on a 24-25 roster, so on a roster this past year, or were promised a roster spot for this coming year, but for either of those categories, lost their roster spot, where they were cut from the team, they were told they weren't going to be able to come anymore because of these roster limits. And they will no longer count towards the roster limit cap.
And I guess this is the part people are kind of waiting on clarity on, is whether or not those kids that are designated, like, there's no repercussion if they transfer, to my understanding.
Correct.
But at the same time, it's like, how do you let them, you know, transfer in conference? Like, I mean, there seems like there has to be good faith practice from the colleges, which we haven't seen very often. And then at the same time, I don't understand if they can get athletic aid and you cover them with scholarships. Is that some of the gray area you're seeing? Because that's how I think Southern Miss is kind of viewing their issues with it right now.
Yeah, and it's really kind of this kind of a weird thing, because the NCAA was very insistent on continuing to allow schools to retain complete control over their roster. So they were very much against what a lot of the objectors had called for, mandatory grandfathering, where the schools would have to keep these players on the roster. A lot of these schools wanted to go to their roster limits, even if they weren't forced to. And a lot of them are going to continue to be at these roster limits, because the designated student athlete label, it only allows you to remain on a roster past the roster limit. It doesn't require the schools to keep you on there. But other than that, the athletes are otherwise not affected. It's really presented as a benefit for the athletes, because they're able to transfer at will. They're able to transfer irregardless of any kind of transfer portal restrictions. The NCAA ceded that in negotiation. And if they do go to a different school and they can get a scholarship, they're still subject to the scholarship limit. That's in effect kind of just based on the roster limit. So it's not like you can have, you know, 106, 107 scholarships if you have some designated student-athlete players past that. But you can be on that roster without kind of having to worry about the roster limit.
So, Dr. Ehrlich, if when the baseball, let's talk about baseball quickly in the remaining moments that we have with you. When the baseball roster limits go into effect, it sounds like Division II and the JUCOs are going to be the ones that are really going to reap the benefits of upgrading their talent, even though it's already pretty good.
Yeah, I really think so. I think that's going to be a huge part of this, and especially given how we're kind of also seeing kind of along the same lines. This is something that's still very speculative, still kind of working through its courts, but changes to the eligibility rules as well, where in some cases some athletes are able to argue in court that their JUCO years or Division II years should count. There definitely is going to be a lot more benefit to going to JUCO and Division II. But also, you know, a lot of athletes are going to be kind of forced into it because the roster spots are going to be somewhat smaller.
And we're talking to Dr. Sam Ehrlich at Boise State University. If you could hold on, Doctor, maybe a couple more questions from myself and the guys on the other side of the break. Is that good?
Of course. I could definitely do that.
Changing world of college athletics, and Dr. Ehrlich is a man really staying on top of it, so we'll continue that conversation on the other side of the break. As we head into the break, don't forget about our good friends at MCS Home Center in Bellevue, 7329 US 98 West, and a great place to go this weekend if you're going to be doing some weekend warrior stuff at your house. And then you can catch up on all the news with the Pine Belt News, your go-to source for news and sports coverage. You can also explore their other publications, Signature Magazine, all for $35 a month, Andrew?
Yep, or $55 if you're out of the county.
There you go. Pine Belt News. We'll be right back.
Robinson Electric Supply in Laurel is a wholesaler and distributor that has been powering our community for over 20 years. With everything from conduits to tape, tools to home automation devices, if you can think of it, we supply it. All you need to do is talk us through the project at hand, and we'll ensure you're equipped to get it done right. To get all the electrical supplies you need, visit Robinson Electric at 519 North 13th Avenue or call us at 601-649-1317.
Hey, Southern Miss fans, TrustCare Health is proud to support the Golden Eagles and help keep our community in top shape. Whether you're cheering at the Rock or the Peak, TrustCare has your back with convenient walk-in clinics and top-notch care for your urgent primary and kids' care needs. From game day injuries to everyday health needs, TrustCare is your go-to team. Visit us in Hattiesburg and Laurel, and let's keep the spirit of Southern Miss soaring to the top. Visit TrustCareHealth.com for more details. TrustCare Health. Feel better faster.
The Eagle Hour. Southern Miss to the top.
Hey, don't forget about the Super Talk Eagle Hour podcast. You can hear it anytime you like on YouTube, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, Audible, Apple, or you can tell Alexa or play the Super Talk Eagle Hour. We begin our second segment of our Friday show, sponsored by Campus Book Mart on Hardy Street, our good friends down there. A great place to buy all your Southern Miss apparel. We're talking to Dr. Sam Ehrlich of Boise State University. And before the guys get back with more detailed questions, I just have one general question to you, sir. And I don't know if you've had time to really analyze this or not, but based on this ruling and the changes that you're studying so closely, what are fans of Boise State University, the University of Southern Mississippi, schools of that size, what are they going to see 5 years from now in collegiate athletics? And if it's going to be different than what they're experiencing now, how will it be different?
I think for both of our fan bases, for both Boise State and Southern Miss, and really all fan bases across the, you know, what they're kind of calling the group of six now, because they're including the Pac-12 with it, I think there's a lot of nervousness. I think there's a lot of kind of apprehension about, because, you know, I think it's impossible to argue. I think it's impossible to say that this doesn't exacerbate some of the competitive balance issues that already existed. Because even if, you know, you had under the table payments, you know, those were a little sketchy, a little hard to track, and a little hard to kind of figure out. Now you have official payments, and, you know, I fully imagine that Southern Miss and Boise, and I know that Boise State, we're not going to be able to get to the full $20.5 million salary cap that a lot of schools, I just saw the University of Virginia, not exactly a, major powerhouse in a lot of sports there, they're announcing that they're going to the full $20.5 million, and you're seeing that across the variety of Power Four. But even beyond that, just the fact that, you know, with these competitive balance exacerbations or even perceived competitive balance exacerbations, we at Boise State still feel like we're going to be able to compete, for example. But if the SEC and the Big Ten and maybe the ACC and the Big 12 as well feel that, hey, we're now on kind of a different level than everyone else, why are we letting the group of six have any kind of chance to succeed here? There's certainly rumors and there's certainly kind of an idea that they may break away. And I think that will set up major conflict, probably litigation as well. And I know for us at Boise State, that's something we're both nervous about and something that we are, can't speak for the athletic department. I'm not a part of it, but I know they're looking to fight that.
Boy, that sounds like doomsday and a half for college athletics.
Doesn't it?
So getting back to the $20.5 million cap, in theory, it creates more of a competitive balance, and teams like Texas can't just spend $40 million on a football team anymore. But it feels like schools, particularly those top 30, 40 schools, are going to find ways around that. Is that something you foresee? And if so, what would they be?
I do. I really do. I feel like the market's already been established. You're not going to you can't put all the toothpaste back in the tube. Maybe you can get a little bit in there to a certain extent, kind of using this NIL Go platform and Deloitte, this accounting firm that's going to be kind of overseeing it, and just the clearinghouse in general kind of going after these deals. But one of two things are going to happen. One is I could tell you, I'm sure their attorney is already lining up these lawsuits. I'm sure there are boosters and collectives that are already getting ready to do this. As soon as the deal gets denied, it's going to get challenged in court. There's going to be a lawsuit over it. And even if it doesn't come from the athletes, given that they did waive some of the rights of the settlement and a lot of this is going to have to go to arbitration and all that kind of thing, cross-section settlements can't necessarily very easily bind third parties. So you're talking about boosters and collectives who did not give up any of their rights under any kind of settlement or anything like that. They still have claims here, and those claims, they certainly may pursue them. I imagine a lot of boosters and collectives are getting ready to, because they have an interest in continuing to fund the sports that they want to fund and the teams that they want to fund. And I imagine they're going to do everything they can to continue to do that.
So you think, Dr. Ehrlich, that collectives so far are going forward, at least in the short future, are going to be in place?
I think for a lot of schools they are. I know a lot of schools are bringing them in-house. I think that's a common trend across the industry, just to have it in-house, to have more control over it, and to really kind of fold it in with revenue sharing. But I imagine, to a certain degree, some schools are going to keep it on the side just to kind of maybe even just to kind of allow for kind of a more true NIL, to kind of the distribution of NIL opportunities across the different sports for real NIL opportunities. But also, potentially, some of them might also be looking to find ways to get around this cap as well.
And the very day that the announcement came down that it was approved, Title IX lawsuits were filed. And you hear the term Title IX all the time, but generally this is, equal treatment for women's sports. What do you make of which nobody's surprised about, by the way, that the lawsuits have jumped on board this quickly, but what do you make and what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone's surprised at all. I think everyone was totally seeing this coming. And one quick important point of clarification, what was filed a couple days ago is actually an appeal of the House settlement, an appeal of final approval of the House settlement. So really what they're challenging in this appeal is the back pay, is looking back at the $2.576 billion that's going to be distributed to past athletes. They're arguing that the calculations that were made, which overwhelmingly is going to go towards football and then to basketball players, because it's based on kind of a more market analysis looking at kind of previous harm, they argue that those needed to reflect Title IX. They needed to reflect how schools would have distributed funds based on Title IX, and that the back pay calculations are illegal. But I think what you're talking about, and I think what everyone's kind of envisioning out of this, the Title IX lawsuit over forward-looking benefits, the $20.5 million, the revenue sharing, that is absolutely coming as well. That is absolutely going to be a thing as well. And while I don't think the appeal is going to go very well, because I imagine that, again, looking at the market analysis, looking at kind of what was instead of what is going to be moving forward, it's going to be hard to argue that just based strictly on economics, based strictly on kind of this antitrust analysis, that the athletes who are not getting, you know, significant benefits here would be entitled under the law to those benefits. But looking forward, when you're talking about direct payments being made in the future from schools to athletes, I think there's a very decent argument that those do need to be calculated under Title IX, and we're going to find out what a court thinks about it, I imagine, pretty soon.
And do you think that at all, that high school, that this would trickle down to high school athletes at some point to where high school kids would start getting paid?
Well, we're going to get our first test on that pretty soon, because actually a couple weeks ago we had a lawsuit filed by actually an incoming Boise State freshman, which is kind of an interesting coincidence. I will be clear, I'm not involved in that lawsuit, but he actually filed a lawsuit against the California Interscholastic Federation, which is California's high school federation, and he is arguing that his rights were violated because high schools cannot pay their athletes directly, and that the CIF really restricts the ability for these athletes to transfer, which is similar to a lot of the changes that we've seen in college sports. So I'm a little pessimistic about that lawsuit. I think that really at the high school level, you're going to have a lot more respect for kind of the amateurism ideals that really are just have been lost in college and not even necessarily because of these lawsuits. I think they're going to consider high school to still be within that character. I've been surprised before, so we'll see.
Sam, you're filled with good news.
Right? I feel like I'm such a downer on this today.
Is there any good for the average sports fan to come out of all this stuff?
I think the good that we're going to that comes out of this, the good that's going to come out of this is that really the athletes are going to be in such a better position now. The athletes are in such a great position now, especially at the football and men's basketball level, because really, it is going to provide a good amount of stability. It's going to provide a good amount of stability where we're going to have these payments. We're going to have this market being established. We're going to have, you know, maybe there's going to be some growing pains with the salary cap, but I imagine that's going to stabilize pretty quickly. One thing I will say is I think there's been a lot of speculation. I tend to agree with some of the speculation that transfers are going to be limited to a certain degree as well, because I think you're going to start seeing more multi-year contracts, multi-year NIL contracts, and as soon as the schools decide to start enforcing those, we might actually see some athletes say, hey, you know what, I signed this multi-year contract, I'm going to stay at my school for a few years and kind of fulfill that end of the contract rather than just jumping from school to school to school.
All right, Dr. Ehrlich, we really appreciate your input. Very kind of you to join us again today, and thank you, sir. We'll stay in touch with you as this thing develops.
Of course, my pleasure.
All right. Thank you, sir. Dr. Sam Ehrlich, Boise State. I'm struck by two things. I think the rights of junior high athletes are being ignored here. I really do.
And we think it's far-fetched, but it really isn't.
The man basically just said is we're going, you know, we talk about that lack of team loyalty, but now we're going to pay for the loyalty.
Well, you're paying for it all. You're already paying for it.
We're going to put you already under a contract where you have to be loyal for 3 years.
Well, I do think for this stuff to level off a little bit, I think there's got to be some type of restrictions in the transfer portal to at least put a
completely
balance.
Agree.
Like, yeah, you get one free one, and then I don't know. There's some consequence for a second. These things are making this worse.
I completely agree with that. I think there's some easy ways to address the transferring back and forth from school to school, and that would help a lot, I think.
And when you say easy, I think you mean common sense too.
Common sense.
Well, that doesn't go well in college sports.
No,
doesn't seem to anymore.
Breaking news, the Saints are leaving New Orleans. We'll have that story in the next break.
You're tuned in to the Eagle Hour. The Eagle Hour. Southern Miss to the top.
Be a good evening. Go to 4th Street Bar and Grill. Get some good food tonight and something to drink. And watch the College World Series on TV. 4th Street Bar and Grill right there in the shadow of the rock. Or you could go to Bo Bay Beignet Company, eat some delicious beignets at 2902 Hardy Street in Hattiesburg. Check out their Facebook page at Mo Bay Beignet Company, Hattiesburg.
So it is killing Andrew, Bob, that he's not at the College World Series right now. It's just killing him over here.
One day I'll get to cover
it. Well, by the way, it is underway, and they're in the second inning now. Nothing between Arizona and Coastal Carolina.
The Chanticleers have runners at first and second with no outs.
Well, there we go. I'm all for the Chanticleers. And we're going to get to the World Series in just a minute. But first, I got to explain this breaking news. Patrick McGee, sports editor of the Times-Picayune. The guys jumped on me early, Patrick, when I teased your segment by saying the Saints are leaving New Orleans, but actually they are, aren't they?
I don't know. I've been to – are they? I don't know. I mean, are we talking about their new training camp in California?
That's exactly what we're talking about, okay. Patrick.
Yeah, sorry, guys. I'm not yeah, we've known about that for a little bit. We got prepared to send our guys out there August there for a little bit. Yeah, so it's like, – thankfully, it's not as long a stint in California as they had a year ago.
Yeah, no, of course they're not leaving the city of New Orleans, but to try. Let's get that out of the way. Let's go to the World Series, and we just updated the score there. And I asked you off air, and you said you guys were real busy covering LSU, and you said to me that I was right, that of all the teams in a super regional and regional, LSU got the easiest path to the College World Series. How did that happen, Patrick?
I mean, sometimes something just goes your way. I mean, I looked at the regional field for Baton Rouge, and I was like, oof, that's a softie. I mean, even having Rhode Island as a 3 seed was just baffling because, I mean, they had Little Rock as a 4 seed out of the OVC, which is not really a strong conference. Little Rock did play very well. Give them credit. At least they gave LSU a little bit of a run for their money. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, West Virginia was bad. I had to watch a good chunk of that super regional, and it wasn't just that West Virginia was making mistakes. It was the type of mistakes they made. I mean, defensively, they just looked like a 4 team. I don't know how – I guess that Clemson regional they came out of was just sloppy, and they just kind of hit their way through it. Because West Virginia did not look like a super regional team.
Yeah. Were you surprised that Alabama, that LSU, after battling through Rhode Island and Arkansas, Little Rock, had any energy left for West Virginia, Patrick?
Well, there were some late nights. I mean, Little Rock beat them once. They had to play. Yeah. It lasted until midnight. I mean, it was. I mean, Dallas Baptist was probably the worst team in the Baton Rouge regional. It's not. Yeah. Well, I mean, Rhode Island was bad. What am I saying? But I mean, it was a weird regional, and LSU did. Had one of the easiest paths you can imagine. That said, LSU is certainly one of the favorites to contend in Omaha.
Let me ask you this. If LSU somehow ends up playing Murray State and Murray State beats LSU, does Baton Rouge riot?
I'm not even going to. I mean, that's quite the – I mean, I think a lot of LSU fans are just happy to see them in Omaha. I don't think a lot of fans really saw this team as a – a good team who could get to Omaha possibly – but not really a national title contender with the way the team played for much of the season. Now, the pitching staff, I think, has come together better late in the season. The bats showed up pretty strong against West Virginia, although I don't think the West Virginia pitching was very good. I think, right at this point, I think LSU is probably playing as good a baseball as they have all season. And that's what's going to make them dangerous in Omaha.
Speaking of riots, Patrick, when you guys are covering the Saints camp in California, are you sending your crew with riot gear?
I don't think they're going to be in a small neighborhood in Los Angeles where the rioting's happening.
So surely it'll be over by then, right? I mean, come on.
That'd be a fun headline for the Times-Picayune, huh? Yeah. Saints get caught in that.
Yeah. But really, Patrick, if you're a ticket sales agent for the New Orleans Saints, you're going to have to work extra hard this year, aren't you? Because what could you possibly say is going to be good about this upcoming season this point?
I mean, the Saints never have a problem selling tickets. Now, in recent, the last 3 to 4 years, it has become a little bit easier, I think, if somebody wants to buy season tickets. I think there is availability out there. For the longest, there was a long wait line, but everything I'm hearing is that they do have some spots to fill going into the season. I'm not completely clued in there, but, I mean, the dome's going to be full, but, I mean, if this team, is like 1-5, yeah, I mean, that dome's going to look really, there's going to be some empty seats and stuff like that. But Saints usually don't have a hard time selling tickets, but, the Saints often surprise whenever they're the most underestimated, and I'm somebody who's, I wasn't Kellen Moore's biggest booster through this, but I think as his track record shows, I mean, this team is going to score points, I think.
And really, when you look at when the Superdome opened, it was the state of the art of everything. It was the apple mm-hmm. of every franchise's eye. But now in this day and age where NFL teams seem to build a new stadium about every 10 or 15 years, the Superdome is really kind of a graybeard now. Has the city or the league ever talked about a new place or any improvements with the dome?
The dome just went under an extensive renovation. And they've got up far. Now, there are certain things I personally don't like about the Superdome. You know, the media accommodations are probably among the worst in the NFL. But, you know, they don't really care about that. They care about the bottom line. And the Dome is going to continue to be the home of the Saints for, you know, at least probably a couple of other decades.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, I you know, at some point would have liked to see them build a different type of stadium, you know, on the side of the Superdome. But, you know, in a city like New Orleans, it's old. There's only so many places in the city that's going to make sense for a football stadium, and that's a really good location where it's at. So the Dome, they're just going to keep putting money into the Dome. It is a really nice facility, a great game, great place to see a game. And as long as the league has a, you know, they're going to want that Super Bowl coming back to New Orleans, you know, every four or 5 years because it's always a success.
We're talking a lot about how bad the Saints are going to be or projecting how bad they're going to be. But when you look in the division, are there – any of the other divisional teams making strides that you think will greatly improve them?
I mean, I think we're kind of looking at a similar situation we saw a year ago. I think, you know, a steady climb for both Atlanta and Carolina, but Tampa is kind of the team you look to as the likely team. The Saints, you know, last three or four years, oh, yeah, they're good. You know, they've got the talent to compete, but no, the Saints, they're in a rebuild mode. They're going to have a young quarterback. They've got some guys that are aging on the defensive side. The Saints are probably going to be viewed by most as the last place team in the NFC South, and I'm not going to argue with them, to be honest.
Wow.
But, yeah, Tampa, I think, is probably your favorite, while, you know, Atlanta and Carolina are showing trends upward. But it's kind of with the Saints, it's a matter of, you know, new coach, but they got to show up and prove it. There's not really a lot of believers out there within the
and no coincidence that the Bucs have the best quarterback in the division, right?
Right. Yeah. The NFL is the court. You know, everything's built around the quarterback. If you can do that and build around them, you're going to have success in the NFL.
And that's what I was saying. Spencer Rattler is not a guy that really evokes
He's
confidence.
Not a Baker Mayfield, no.
You know,
no.
With a lot
they
of
have
teams.
Tyler Shough. What? The yeah,
Louisville. Tyler. Shuck.
That's bad when you don't even know his last name.
Well, he played college football for like 10 years.
I was going to say, the old
pretty experienced.
That's the old man from Louisville, right?
Yeah. But Baker Mayfield, the best in the division, right?
Yeah. I think maybe people are kind of waiting to see what Michael Penix does whenever he gets an opportunity. But, yeah, there's no doubt.
So they've had their mini camps and OTAs and things like that. Take us through the chronology of camp, actually. I know we're still about a month away.
I don't have a calendar sitting here in front of me.
But generally that last week in July is generally when they kind of start getting together?
Yeah. It's late July, early August is whenever they'll be gathering again for the full camp.
And they're going to start camp. We talked about the stint in Cali because they're actually going to end, from what I understand, and you can set me right, Patrick, that they're going to end a section of the camp in California because their first game is against one of the California teams in the preseason. So they'll go out there and practice, I think, at Irvine or someplace like that, and then just and play their first exhibition game.
Yeah, I mean,
game.
They mainly just probably see this opportunity to get out of humidity for a little bit, and they've got to make that trip out there anyway.
So is Rattler the guy at this point?
No. It's a two-way battle between Tyler Shuck and Rattler. And, I mean, they drafted Rattler to be potentially the starter this year, and all indications are is that he has the arm talent and a lot of intangibles that you want for that job. He just doesn't have the experience. Battled through some injuries in college, but it wasn't anything structural to where you're thinking it's going to hinder him. It's just a matter of him staying healthy as a pro football player. So I think the long-term idea is that, you know, the way I kind of play it out, it plays out in my mind is that Rattler potentially is the game one season opener, but Shuck at one point, maybe in the first month or two, gets his opportunity. Apparently Rattler has looked stronger through camp, through these little sessions they've had, and maybe he's taken a little bit of a leap into year two. But Shuck is the guy, I think, who projects well down the road. He's really got kind of a lot of the things you want in an NFL quarterback in terms of height, size, He's mobile for a guy that looks a little bit awkward back there, and he's got a super strong arm. So it's a two-way battle to be the starting quarterback for the Saints.
Well, it may seem like we're talking about this early, but they're about 6 weeks away from going to camp and getting ready for the season. Yeah. So it'll be here for
you. It's right upon us.
All right, Patrick, we appreciate you very much, man. We'll look forward to having you back on the show really soon.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Patrick McGee, everybody, from the Times Picayune.
Yeah, we'll ask him next time about, you know, we're kind of into the offseason of the NBA, even though the Pacers and the Thunder still have a little work to be done. But what's going to go on in New Orleans? It was not a good year for the
You mean the train wreck? Yeah. The Pelicans?
Yeah, dumpster fire. Pick your cliche. Yeah.
Zion facing, was it rape allegations? So it's good things
in
New Orleans.
Right?
Yeah.
He's been kind of a disappointment.
I think that's an understatement.
Yeah,
Bob.
I'd say so. And he was so highly recruited. Like he was like Superman coming out of college.
Such an optimistic show today.
It has been really good. I think it goes right along with the weather. But I'm sure Patrick, Andrew has something to pick us all up. In the last second.
No.
Robinson Electric Supply in Laurel is a wholesaler and distributor that has been powering our community for over 20 years. With everything from conduits to tape, tools to home automation devices, if you can think of it, we supply it. All you need to do is talk us through the project at hand, and we'll ensure you're equipped to get it done right. To get all the electrical supplies you need, visit Robinson Electric at 519 North 13th Avenue or call us at 601-649-1317.
Hey, Southern Miss fans. TrustCare Health is proud to support the Golden Eagles and help keep our community in top shape. Whether you're cheering at the Rock or the Peak, TrustCare has your back with convenient walk-in clinics and top-notch care for your urgent primary and kids' care needs. From game day injuries to everyday health needs, TrustCare is your go-to team. Visit us in Hattiesburg and Laurel, and let's keep the spirit of Southern Miss soaring to the top. Visit TrustCareHealth.com for more details. TrustCare Health. Feel better faster.
Southern Miss to the top. To the top. You're tuned in to the Eagle Hour.
Hey, I want to thank Dr. Sam Ehrlich, Boise State University, for joining us early in the show, and our good friend Patrick McGee from down at the Times Picayune in the Crescent City. This segment sponsored by our good friends at DBAT on Hardy Street. DBAT, where you can take your children for baseball, softball training, and it will be absolutely elite. And they got a great pro shop, got a lot of camps coming up for the summer, lots of reasons to go to their website and check out DBAT here in Hattiesburg. And, of course, want to thank our friends at Genesis of Hattiesburg, the official auto dealer of the Eagle Hour. All right, news and notes, Andrew.
Well, Coastal Carolina is up 2-0 on Arizona, for those who are not watching.
Yes.
But the MLB Draft Combine has announced who will be participating, and you do have two Southern Miss kids as well as two locals as well. So Jake Cook and JB Middleton will be participating. I think one of those was maybe a little surprising because I think there's a hope that they can keep Jake Cook with NIL means, but you know, who knows, because there's a chance he'll get taken pretty high.
Well, I think that'll be all up to where he gets taken in the draft and what those numbers
I've heard as high as the fifth round, as far as speculations, but you know, we'll see if you know, Southern Miss can match or maybe pay more. You never know,
but it's just nice to know that regardless of what happens, Southern Miss is in the ball game with any of these guys as far as NIL
money goes. Any of them but JB.
Even
Nick Monastery, I think, is not out of the question, although I think I don't know how much higher he would raise his stock by coming back unless you want to try and win a national championship. And then also the twin brothers down at Purvis, Jacob and JoJo Parker, were both invited to the MLB Draft Combine. They will both be participating in that. That is in Phoenix, Arizona, I think starting on Wednesday.
You know, I've often wondered about that. I know you're a baseball guy, Kelly, but I've often wondered about going directly from high school into professional baseball. As a parent, I would be very hesitant to let my child do that. That's just my opinion, because you're so immature when you get out of high school. And what real chance does that's got to be? I don't care how good you are in high school, you're playing against the best baseball players in the world.
No, see, I'm just the opposite, Bob, on that. Because number one, it's about money. All right, lots of times you want your kids to get an education so they can make a living.
Sure.
But you
can go back to school with money.
You could, but you could also, if you make enough money, you wouldn't have to worry about going back to school. And once you have that notoriety, you can go into marketing with a bunch of different companies, just being a personality.
Do you want to know?
Agree to disagree on that.
Let's put it in this context. Do you want to know what the draft slot value is? So JoJo Parker is he's projected to go as high as number 10 overall in the upcoming draft. He would be turning down $13 million.
Well, that's an exception to the rule.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
that's a real exception to.
But very few high school kids are. Not as many high school kids are going to get drafted right out of high school.
Well,
you have to be exceptional.
It's more than you think. I mean, especially in those first two rounds. I mean, it's more high school kids in those first two rounds than I would argue college.
But overall, college is still the way to go.
Well, I guess if your kid gets $13 million, mom can go with him. But, I mean, you think about this. When your child leaves high school, it's already a little disconcerting when they go off to college.
Oh, yeah. But
when you go off, say, to California, and you're the only English-speaking guy living at the hotel, I mean, come on, man. And you're 17, 18 years old?
That's reasonable, but I think what you said kind of tongue-in-cheek is actually true, that parents would also, with that
I would think so. Go with them.
That kind of resources,
yeah.
The parents could drop what they're doing.
100% on
you know,
that.
And,
yeah,
and take care of them and watch them, and that's their first responsibility anyway.
And my wife
anyway.
Would have.
Of course.
Well, I'm not speaking for the Parkers in any way, but I've gotten to know them and their family pretty well. I think Jacob and JoJo will be fine. Whatever path they do, they seem to be very, very well equipped to handle that spotlight, go to college. I think they'll be just fine.
And of course, they're committed to Mississippi State, so your heart would just have to bleed for the poor Bulldogs who would lose the Parker boys.
Were they recruited by Southern Miss?
Well, so they've been committed to Mississippi State since they were freshmen, and they've been very, like, I mean, they – their hearts have been set on that. It's like a family thing.
So I
couldn't tell you if Oz knocked on the door, but probably would have been hard to anyway.
But it's a Mississippi State family is what you're saying.
Essentially, yeah. But, you know, with Lamonis getting fired, I was – because I knew for at least in their junior years that decision was looming. Like, they didn't quite know what to do. But, you know, with Lamonis getting fired and – both of their draft stocks surging. I mean, it's hard to see that they'd end up in Starkville.
And final news and notes, Southern Miss quarterback Braylon Braxton has been named by Athlon as the top quarterback in the Sun Belt Conference coming into this coming season. What strikes me as kind of odd there is the NFL and college, I think, is so quarterback driven that how can you name Braylon Braxton the number one quarterback in the league, but yet have the team that he plays for
West? I can answer that. You know how they figured that out? It's all about which quarterback is back in the conference. Because, you know, everybody's hitting the portal now. It's that simple.
But I mean, one guy...
No knock to Braylon Braxton.
Right.
I mean, he's going to be a very good player. He was a good player last year. He probably would be up there anyway. But I'm just saying, come on. There's not a hard science to it.
I just don't understand how the team can be that low when their star player is ranked as number one.
We're going to see soon, aren't we?
Indeed we are.
There's going to be a lot of broken hearts unless they're a lot better. And hopefully they will be.
Yeah, I hope so.
Hopefully they will be. That wraps up the show. We'll be back Monday. We're going to have Hacksaw.
The old left-hander?
Known as the old left-hander, otherwise known as Jack Duggan, on the show with us Monday. We always look forward to that. Have a happy, safe weekend, everybody.
And Father's Day.
And happy Father's Day. Southern Miss.
To the top.
To the sea.
Waiting. You do it at grocery stores, in traffic, and at the doctor's office. But what if you could skip the wait altogether? Introducing TrustCare Plus, a healthcare membership that makes feeling better even faster. Skip the waiting room and enjoy priority access at any TrustCare clinic. Sick kid? Text your care crew day or night. Get discounts on prescriptions and so much more. Wait no more. Feeling better just got a whole lot faster. Join TrustCare Plus today. Plans start from just $15 a month. Learn more at trustcarehealth.com/plus.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.